Thank you for welcoming me here today. I'm so grateful to be able to have a place to be tonight. Last week, I ended it off. We were talking about on page 63, how it works, and it was the beginning of step three. And I was speaking about the fact that it had to be all or nothing for me. I couldn't do, you know, it says it right in the preamble, half measures avail us nothing. So when we do the third step prayer, and I say, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, thy way of life. May I do thy will always. It's funny because this third step prayer applies so much to me right now today. I was just talking to Rich before we got here. I was flooded. My bedroom is in my finished basement, and I got 4 feet of water. So, you know, if I don't surrender my will, I'm still micromanaging the situation. I'm still playing God behind there's that director in me coming out. And, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and I still have all of these same flaws and characteristics that I'm trying to get better one day at a time. But as I'm reading, and this is why I read the prayer mainly for myself to hear again, is I made this commitment when I did my third step. I said, I offer myself to thee. So no matter what, and it's funny because I don't call my sponsor as often as I should, and it's almost like he has this sixth sense, and he calls me when he knows something's up. And he called me up the day before yesterday to ask me what was going on, and he lives in Pennsylvania, so we get spotty communication. So every time I said something, because I was caught in self, and he was about to retort, and he talks in fortune cookies all the time, call dropped. I was like... And I tried calling him again, because that's what you're supposed to do. And it went to voicemail. I was like, oh, well, I guess it wasn't meant to be. Let me sit in my pity pot and waddle for a while. Well, he called me again. We did this for like 6 phone calls back and forth. And finally he said, Dee, I'll call you when I'm in a better service area. I was like, okay. At that point, I was already out of my pity pot. I was trying to do whatever the next right thing would have been. And that's where that acceptance came in. Instead of looking at things that all this happened to me, these things just happened. God, I offer myself to thee to do with me and build with me as thou wilt. I don't know what exactly it is that is coming out of this whole experience. Even if it's just, you know, giving me a reminder of my faith. And nudging me in the right direction. Hey, don't forget who's in control. Everything's going to be okay. And that's what I do believe is going on here. So I'm trying to flip the script, and I try to do a gratitude list. I'm not homeless. I don't have heat and hot water right now, but I do have a home. If I didn't, I've had so many people come out of the blue and told me, hey, you're welcome to come over, you need a shower, you need to do any, you can, you know, my AA family has come through fruition, and, you know, it's one thing when I say we were the throwaways last week, alcoholics, you know, we're the ones that nobody wanted anything to do with, and you come to this level of wanting to follow this program and these suggestions. And all of a sudden, you see how valued you really are, because that was the last thing I ever inserted with myself in connection with myself. Value? No. There was never D equal value. There's zero value. It was total contrary of that. And now when I hear all of these loving messages and all of these people just touching out, and it's that just in itself, just for this experience, if that's the reminder I have to get how many people God has placed in my life. I'm not very close with my blood relatives. I've made amends, and we coexist. Some of us, we coexist. Some of us, we get along better than before. But there's nothing like an AA family. We have that secret language. We all know the certain isms that only we can identify with, and all I have to do is give you a look or a head tilt, and you'll be like, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And you know, that's has been coming through in so many disguises this past week that, you know, in my mind, there is no doubt that there is a higher power working for me. And you asked me this 11 years ago, I would have said, working against me. Here he goes again, pile it on, you know. No, it's just, it's so different. So that being said, you know, I want to talk about my fourth step. The inventory of all of these lovely things that I have. Okay, now, of course, you know, the writer of this book was a stockbroker. So he does everything in deficits and in and God, if I only had an MBA. So when he's doing this inventory, he says we have to take care of our problems root and branch. If we don't get rid of them root and branch, then it's that, again, that frothy emotional appeal it talks about in the book. We have to really be willing to let go of everything, not any reservations, because the minute you have a reservation, that's that frothy appeal. The frothy appeal, and the frothy appeal I was talking about is, you know, when you have a frothy latte, all of that's just whipped milk and air. There's no depth to it. There's no, it, that's what they mean when they say frothy. So when you think about it, okay, if I'm just doing this with that frothy appeal, nothing is going to get done. It's, I'm just shooting words into the wind, basically, and getting splattered back because it's milk and air. So, you know, whatever's going to come back is. And no, I can't do that. I need to do this. I need to be thorough about it because my life depends on this, on these decisions. So I start, he has his list here with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer. And I do mine, and when I say it affects my self-esteem, sex relations, pocketbook, personal and emotional securities, I, of course, because I... This was in 1935, and we are now in the millennia, and now there's mental diagnosis that we were not so privy of before. When I do the fourth list, well, the fourth step, I check off places where it says self-esteem, fear, sex, pocketbook, ego. When I am doing all of that stuff, the ambitions, self-esteem, fears, and ambitions, I have dual diagnosis with depression and bipolar, so a lot of those things are all checked off with the same thing because of that dual diagnosis. And you don't really, and when I'm taking somebody through this and I'm doing it, I said, which also affects my pocketbook indirectly. Because of all of those things that I had going on, I wasn't able to perform my work. I wasn't able to go to work. There was always, so I had to get to the bottom of this problem, root and branch. How do I do that? Well, the first thing I did was I tried to say a prayer. I tried to say a prayer to let me be as open as possible, and more will be revealed. I can't remember everything. God knows I pickled this brain starting early as age 10. So there's a lot I don't remember. Plus, as I said last week, I'm epileptic, so I have forgotten a lot of files. Things get deleted for me, and things get deleted. So it's just, so I'm trying to do this as best possible. So one of the first things that I have on my list, and it was a repressed memory for the longest time, I spoke that I was sexually molested from age 4 to 7. And that the reason I'm bringing that up again is because when I talked about it last week, I said about the honesty, and it's an honest program. And the first thing for me is I did not know exactly what honesty meant. Because being put through that experience, I learned to omit. I learned to edit things out. Lies by omission are still lies, but I didn't know. And then, you mind you, this has been my way of life all my life, because there are certain things you just don't talk about, and they stay, you know, it happens. It's okay. Why are we bringing it up now? That was years ago. I have to bring it up. I have to, because that has to do with the root and branch of my problem. If I don't address that, that's what made me emotionally insecure as an adult. That's what made me lack ambition. That's what made me, all of those things, all of those different incidents that have happened molded me to be the person that I am. And going through a four-step with them and identifying them, seeing them in black and white, and I said this last week as well, I do it. I have my columns to name what they did, what it affected. So you check off any one of those, which is success, self-esteem, fears, security, spirituality. Because a lot of people identify spirituality and religion as it's one, but it really isn't. Religion is religion, and spirituality is spirituality. And there are a lot of people that are religious that don't have the same spirituality or the same faith. And if that wasn't the case, then we would not have any priests, nuns. I've known ministers that are alcoholics as well. Because if the religion is what's going to cure this disease, then it didn't cure me. And Lord knows my parents tried to break that Bible on me. So, it's a deeper problem. Where's the problem? I don't know. Let's do this work and find out. So now I'm starting to touch on the surface. And I'm starting to write down whatever memories I have at the time. Because, see, here's the thing about this four-step. And when Bill did his four-step with, oh gosh, I can't remember, Evie. When he did his four-step with Evie, he did them in a day. You're going to tell me in a day you remember every exact nature of your wrongs? And does that mean that this is one and done? Does it say anywhere in the book it's one and done? And that's why I always say, you know what, I'm going to do as much as I can remember. And I think of it like spring cleaning. And I do it again every year. You do another four step. Because sometimes there is something there that subconsciously you have not let go of. And it keeps manifesting like the whack-a-mole and something that just doesn't even make sense, but it has to do with something else. I was reading out of the 12 and 12 when we're doing the four-step, and it's talking about resentments, and I have fear of abandonment and abandonment issues. I'm a middle child, and I'm not using that as an excuse by any means. I'm the only girl. My grandmother, my mom's mom, was my life. She was, you know, and you always have that one person that thinks that you are the queen. That was her. And when I was nine, she used to take care of us from infancy until I was nine. At age nine, we moved. My father decided to retire and relocate to Puerto Rico. So we all moved to Puerto Rico. My grandmother lived in Patterson. We left Patterson and we went to Puerto Rico. I don't speak Spanish at all. So, of course, the first thing that you do is culture shock. I mean, after the humidity hits you, it's culture shock. So, I'm here, and this was one of the first resentments that I consciously remember. Is I was there, I was at my aunt's house. And, of course, everybody in my household, we all spoke English. That was our first language. But now here we are immersed in this island, and everybody's talking in Spanish because, you know, you are where your surroundings are. And I'm like, all right, it's got nothing to do with me because all I hear is blah, 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 you know. And they do it fast. So all of a sudden, my mother says to me, and it's like they had this, my family is powwowing. My aunt, my mom, my aunt's neighbor, which they're bilingual, But they're saying something in Spanish, and I hear the little snickers, and then all of a sudden, I hear my mom say, hey, Dee. I said, yeah? I want you to go to the store. My aunt's house was in the corner, and right across that corner is a corner store, like a Krauser's or something like that. She goes, I want you to go to the store and go buy newspaper. And I am the most timid, frightened, skittish little child you have ever met. I used to hide under the table whenever people used to come. I hated people. And looking back, probably, you know, stemmed from what I went through in my early childhood. But I kept going like this. And my mother says, no, you're going to go, and you're going to go to the corner store and go ask him for a newspaper. I don't speak Spanish. What am I supposed to do? So she says it to me, and she's trying to break it down phonetically. Now, mind you, I love it because I'm guilty of doing this too. If you never spoken a language with your children at all, and all of a sudden you want to impress your relatives, why all of a sudden do you start speaking fluently to them? Like, all of a sudden they're going to catch your shorthand. I'm guilty of that because I do it with my kids. So my mom is breaking it down. She goes, I want you to get me a newspaper. You're going to ask him for and newspaper periodicals. Okay, so in Spanish it's called periodico. So she says, go get a periódico. Huh? And I'm telling you, like, I want, God, please open and swallow me whole right now. I'm 9 years old. Here I am having to go across the street, leave the safety net of my aunt's backyard to go and ask for this thing that I can't even start the word from, you know, let alone rolling R's. Now you're getting in fancy. So she goes, go right now. Finally, I have to go. So she gives me a quarter, and I'm going to the store. I'm really aging myself. So I'm going to the store to go get the newspaper. And I'm there, and I don't see a newspaper stand or anything. And the owner of the store, he's like, what do you want? And he's telling me in Spanish. Like, come on, girl, get it out of you in Spanish. He's saying all of this, egging me on. What are you here for? What do you want? I start to cry. So the owner of the store steps outside and talks from the corner to the backyard where all my family's all has this big, you know, the punchline's coming. And he says to them, in English, what does she want? That's my number one resentment that I can physically actually still remember till this day. If you knew English all this time, why are you putting me through this? So my parents told, my mom told them, you know, yeah, she wants the newspaper, get a newspaper. I got the newspaper, brought it back, and I remember throwing it to my mom and going into my room, locking myself in my aunt's room and just crying on the floor of embarrassment. And you know, that's like, what, you know, it wasn't a learning experience for me. It was just ridicule. And that ridicule scarred me with my self-esteem and my ambitions, still to this day. So if I don't go back as far back as I can remember, I was going back to the 12 and 12. The 12 and 12, when they talk about resentments, they also talk about the abandonment of people that we have lost or that have moved away. And that to me was like, wow, I was meant to read that because, like I said earlier, my grandmother was my world. And when I was abrupted and we moved, I left her behind, but she was the only person that I really spoke to because I didn't speak to my parents. My parents are very active in politics and I don't know, whatever. And it was just my brothers, myself, and my grandmother. And my grandmother was an alcoholic, a chronic alcoholic who died of this disease. But I loved her. I loved her, and I think the more I think about it now is because I identified so much with her. I mean, she was the party. She was the light of everything. And I don't think I've ever seen her a day sober in my life. Couldn't tell me that then because I had no idea. But knowing now what I know, I don't think I ever met her a day sober in my life. So when I'm reading about that and I'm reading about the resentments that we have to those that, you know, we have lost or who have moved away. When I moved away, that for me was another resentment. And you couldn't say anything to me about my grandmother because I loved her. How, you know, don't tell me I have a resentment against her, because of course there's that negative connotation. But resentment just means that it makes me feel something. It's a re-feeling. It comes from the Latin word resentir, which means re-feel. So I realized that was another big one that I had to go on my fourth step. I had to write down my grandmother because of that fear and that abandonment that I felt from that separation. So as I'm reading the 12 and 12, and I'm getting to know, you know, more things as I'm reading and discussing literature, I'm starting to see a pattern. I'm starting to formulate. I'm like, oh, okay, now I'm getting into the groove of this. So I was able to write down as many things as I could. And a lot of them, of course, like I said, they were ambitions. Most of them were my insecurities. Most of them were my fears. All of them had fear and self-esteem. Fear, self-esteem. That was a pattern. Every single one, that those two were always checked off. What are fear and self-esteem? Ego. So it's all about my ego. So my sponsor says to me, okay, so once I checked off all of that, he says, what would a spiritually fit person have done? So I'm going back to the same columns, the same situations, the same scenarios, except knowing now what I know as if I was talking to a sponsee who's telling me this. And now I'm reading it. Spiritually fit. What could I have done differently? Everything. Not react. Not be an ego. Because spiritually fit means we're not in our ego. We're essentially going into that spiritual realm, right? So, this thing with the newspaper and all of that, I was embarrassed. I was mortified. I was embarrassed. But it's just ego. Was there anything in that incident that was of major harm? There's nothing. And I'm carrying this with me for over 50 years. Why? Why? What's the point? Because my pride is still hurt? I have to let that go. It's not good for me to carry these resentments forth. So, and I keep using that one because that's like, you know, I'm not going to get into all of my lists, but that little incident, and this is where that root and branch comes into fruition again, because that little incident, which I'm carrying with me still even to this day, as much as I try to let it go and I think it's gone, there's still little bits of it that I have to realize, well, okay, so why is this bothering me the way it's bothering me? And I have to look at my situations from a spiritually fit person. And when I do that, even with this whole incident that happened with my house, as a spiritually fit person, I can be wallowing in self-pity, or I can actually turn around and see all of the things that were not damaged. Instead of looking at all the damages, I'm looking at all the things that I still have that are still good. Because it's not healthy for me to be in that old mentality. I had a neighbor, she came over to me, she goes, I was afraid that you were going to drink because of everything that was going on. I was like, because she knows I'm in recovery. I've only known her for 4 years. The first year I moved there, her daughter was having a baby shower, so she brings me back a huge pitcher of jungle juice. And she goes, hey, look, and she's all excited. I said, thank you so much for thinking of me, but I'm an alcoholic. So I broke my anonymity to her. I really don't care who I break my anonymity to, because if I can help somebody, great. So she had that in her head still, so she thought that what was going on was going to make me relapse. And I just looked at her and I laughed, because she kept calling me, and I said, I'm not throwing away 11 years over 4 feet of water. It's just not going to happen. It's not even... Now, I did choose the wrong week to stop smoking. I'm not going to tell you. I went to 7-Eleven a couple times, walked out of there with gummies and other stuff, but not cigarettes. So that in itself was a triumph, but I said, no. Drinking was the last, it didn't even faze me. It didn't faze me. Why? Because I'm handing it over to my higher power. I'm not playing director. I'm not going to get, that's where that slippery slope is. It's all or nothing. So when I get into my fifth step, right, and I talked all of this with my sponsor, and that's when he told me about, you know, what would a spiritually fit person have done differently. And he actually helps me and aids me to see my wrongs, because sometimes when you're in it, you just don't see it. You see things from your perspective, and that's it, and it's difficult. And if I try talking about it with somebody who is a familiar to me, a friend of mine, they're going to see it from my side too, and they're going to be like, oh, screw that person. You know, they forget them. But now if I'm talking to a unbiased party, which ideally my sponsor is at that point, he's going to help me to see it from yet a different perspective, because my disease is of perception. So I did that. I was able to react differently. And I love the reading of Freedom of Bondage on page 552. I tell everyone to do that for 2 weeks after they do a fifth step with me. So you sit down, you're going to do your sixth step. That's quiet, right? It says right there, you're going to go over everything, make sure that you did not leave off anything. You didn't forget anything at all. You're sitting, you're meditating for an hour. That's 1 hour. That's just you and your higher power for that hour and that sixth step. So I want to make sure I covered as much as I can recall and I can recollect at the time. Now when I go into the seven-step prayer, which is the part that has the amen to the third-step prayer. Right? So when we read the seven-step prayer, it says, my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. So the third step we started out, there wasn't an amen. The amen comes here in the seventh step. And there's a big thing I hear it often within meetings and the fellowship, is that they say, I'm working on my character defects. Well, first off, that means you're still in control. You're directing the show. You should not be working on anything, because the seven steps just said good and bad. And it's not character defects. It's defects of character. Every characteristic we have, God has given us for a reason. Ego is a good characteristic to have, because otherwise you wouldn't be presented well. You wouldn't show up on time. You wouldn't want to be advocating for yourself in a certain way where it shows, for lack of a better word, for me, I'm going to say, it shows the progress of what recovery should look like, as opposed to what I was before I was recovered. When I was not recovered, I didn't care about anybody's time. I was disrespecting your time. I would arrive to places late if I showed up, and I wouldn't give you an excuse. So now I'm doing things a different way. But it has to do with my defects of character. I'm trying to also keep those. I give them all to God. God, whichever ones are of usefulness to you and my fellows, and the ones that are not, I know, and I know, and I trust. That's the big thing. I trust that that's going to just take a back seat. That's not for me to control, and it's not for me to say. And you hear often so many people say, oh, no, but I have to get rid of this. No, we don't get rid of. Because then you're in that management business that we were talking about last week. God is management. You're an employee. That's it. So when I say, God, remove these things, I'm trusting in the plan and trusting in the process. Mm-hmm. now want to proceed to go on to whatever the next right thing is to do. So when I get into my A step, and I like the promise that's on page 77 when it says into action. It says, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set the right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. I am. For me, that promise has come true. I'm not here to keep score like I was before. I'm not here to do what? To perform, basically to perform. Because that's all I was doing. It was a performance. I was directing, acting. I was doing everything. And now it's what it is, and that's it. I can't make any excuses of it. My job is to work it to the best of my ability according to my maker and my creator. And hopefully, within doing that, I can help you or someone else. And that's what keeps me going on a daily basis and getting up every day. Because otherwise, I can just clam up and say, you know what? All right, not today. I'm going to take the day off. And if I do that, then one day turns into a week, into a month, and then I'm right back where I started. And I don't want to trade my life for that. My life it's immensely... My relationship with my children alone, which I never thought would have happened, it's just night and day. I think I thank God, and I say that often, for every experience I have had, even being sexually molested. I thank God for everything because that has molded me to the person I am right here, right now. And I have been able to share my story with countless other people that do not even talk about those things. I've gone to Integrity House. I've gone to many different places, and I bring right off the bat. That's like one of the first things I say. And I'll ask in a room. I'll come in because, of course, I'm not the quiet one. I'm always the clown. So I say, who here has ever been laughed at? Who's ever been shy? Who's ever been scared? Who's ever cursed? Who's ever been self-centered? Who's ever been raped? Who's ever been... keep your hand up, okay? If I touch any of those characteristics, keep your hand up. And then I say, welcome, you're in the right room. Because only in rooms like this will we be able to identify with all of those things. Because whether you're saying it or you're not, there is something in there that I know we have all had and we have and share in common. And that's where the recovery begins, because it's a we fellowship. So if I can lean on you and you know my story somewhat because you've been through it, we're all walking in each other's shoes. We're being able to now make sense, and the fact that something that was nonsensical is actually there is a purpose to this all. And I have to believe there is a purpose to this all. And honestly, I cannot tell you how many people I have sponsored that have the same exact story I do. That's no coincidence. So there's that eight-step promise, you know. Then we go into the ninth step, right? Making that list of all those whom I have harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. All I have to do, and all they're telling me to do, is I have to have the willingness. I'm not saying you have to do it. You just have to become willing. My sponsor said it to me. He broke it down really easy. He goes, you know what that means, D? If you're on a train and you see somebody that's on your list, you don't go to run the other direction. You stay there. You're willing. You're willing to have any conversation, no matter what it is. Because before, I would have been like, oh, there's that. Out. See ya. That's not my way of thinking anymore. And that's where that willingness comes in. And I have done that. And there have been some occasions where the amends was not, it was already, I began the amends by just approaching it differently, because amends means to fix something that was broken, right? So by doing something different, that's already an amends, because I'm not living in the same past cycle of crap. So now that I am able to do that, there are some people that I know that they're not ready to have that conversation with me, because I have to understand, I have wronged them. They don't have the same thing I have, which is this spiritual journey that I'm on. And I like to classify people, and it helps me to understand, is two categories. There's spiritually healing and spiritually diseased. And those who are spiritually diseased, I can't resent them for being sick. It's just like if there was somebody with cancer, I can't resent you for having a tumor. Mm-hmm. And you know, those who are spiritually diseased have a tumor. It's a different type of tumor, but they have a tumor. And that's that blockage with their higher power and their creator and their journey. And it's not for me to tell them when they're supposed to go on it. It's for me to know when to walk away and not push. Because, see, I can do that too. I can become a big book thumper and start pushing something on you when you're not ready and impede your journey. I don't want to do that either. So there again comes that prayer, you know, with that 7-step prayer. God, it's all in your hands, good and bad. So then we have that. The 9-step promises, which, you know, everybody talks about, and you hear them at every meeting. And everybody talks about the 9-step promise as if it was the only promise, because they say the AA promises. No, well, those are the 9-step promises. Those aren't all the promises. And to be quite honest with you, my favorite are the 10-step promises. Because for me, those 10-step promises have come true. Just want to briefly go through them. It's page 84, bottom paragraph. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long we keep in fit spiritual condition. And this brings me back to what my neighbor was saying to me. And she was afraid that, oh, I might pick up or I may want to relapse. I have alcohol in my house. I have a 30-year-old daughter. I have a 24-year-old daughter. My parents come over. I have alcohol in my house. I'm neutral. And that's one of those promises that came true. It's just, I don't even think of it. I don't even see it, to be honest with you. So it wasn't until she said that, and I realized, oh, she's standing right in front of a bottle of wine that was right there. I didn't even realize that the bottle of wine was there, because to me it faded into like wall space. I don't think of it. And that's one of the lovely benefits of just being able to give in and being open-minded and giving yourself completely without abandon into this program, which I stated last week. I had to make that decision. I'm in or I'm out, but I can't do it halfway. And when I finally made that decision, these promises are all coming true. And I always make a point, because of course, you know, I it's all about me, and I'm selfish and self-centered and egotistical. But anytime we go to a meeting and the people say the promises and they talk about the promises, I always make a point to emphasize the 9-step promises, because I want people to know that's just the 9-step promises. And there are so many more promises in this book. I mean, there's some in the foreword, there's some in all three. Every chapter has promises in them. And one thing about this book, my sponsor told me, every time we read the book, he says, you read it with a fresh pair of eyes. So something that I may not have even noticed at the time, maybe because I was not feeling in that particular emotion, all of a sudden I'll read something and it's like, wow, I never read that before. So I've had this book now for 9 years, and it's highlighted in many different colors, not to mention it's also underlined in pen, because I'll go back and I'll read something else, and if at the time I have a different highlighter in my hand, I'm like, oh, how did I miss this? I was 3 years in, I was going to Florida, and I brought my big book with me on the plane. I'm now starting the program 3 years in, because I was dry for the first 2.5. So I'm reading my book, and all of a sudden, at one point, I have the highlighter, and you know, there's turbulence, so I take my highlighter, and instead of highlighting the whole page, I just went like this, and dropped my highlighter, flew out and everything. But I have that in How It Works. That's exactly how it is. It's just scribbled the whole thing to highlight. And it's such a freeing manner. This big book is a manual. It's an instruction manual. It's a way of life. It's something for us to go back and relate to. And when you guys don't have meetings, and I told everybody through COVID, you don't have meetings, read the stories in the back. Those are meetings in print. It's still a meeting. And if not, call your sponsor, because if I can identify with something that you're feeling at that particular moment, I'm not going to say I'm a big book thumper where I know the whole book by heart, you know, most. But some of the stories I can say, oh, okay, wait a second. You're feeling in whatever this emotion is. Read Into the Wind. Read, you know, one of the stories in the back. And they can actually identify. Sometimes that's all they need. Because how many times do we all say, oh, I was feeling like crap. I didn't want to come to the meeting. I went to the meeting. I'm glad I went. Now I feel better. Why is that? Well, because you got out of yourself. That's really what it is. You got out of yourself. You opened your mind long enough to see if you can hear a message from your higher power. That's how I feel. If I get in my own way, which I can, I will miss that message. So I'm always so grateful for those opportunities. My 11 steps sought through prayer and meditation. Prayer and meditation was not one of my big things because I'm ADD. So that means you have to stay quiet. That means you have to quiet the calamity around you. I'm still working on the silence part. But I will say, every day, and I do it as it's a habit now, because if I don't do it as a habit, I know it's easy to slack and forget. Every morning, as soon as I wake up, before I even get out of bed, before you go to that bathroom, before you do whatever you do, I open my eyes and say, thank God. I thank him. I say my prayer. I have a list of people whom I pray for, and I try to continually add to it. I don't always do that because I tend to forget. But I try to encumber everybody. And I was saying to Sponsee one day, I said, you know, sometimes there's meetings and I don't remember people's names, but I figure if I have their face, God knows, he's got photo recognition. He'll know who I'm talking about because I'll think of that person. I'm like, I can't remember their name for anything, but, and I believe God works that way. My God works that way. He knows who I'm talking about, who I'm intending, and I don't have to be perfect. That's the great thing about this. I don't have to be perfect. God loves me just the way I am. I'm trying to be better. The way I look at all of these promises and all of these gifts, to me, I don't look at it as a gift, because when we were younger and you got something as a Christmas gift, say you really wanted this jacket. You really wanted a leather jacket, okay? and you really, really, really wanted it, and you had it on your Christmas list, and somebody gives it to you for Christmas. Now, Christmas is over, come March, whatever, that leather jacket's hanging on the floor, it's not on the closet, it's thrown wherever, it's in the back seat of your car, you don't appreciate it because it was just given to you. Now, say I really wanted this jacket, and I worked 3 jobs to get this jacket. And I'm working very hard for this thing that I really, really want. Do you think I'm going to let that jacket be on the floor in the back seat of my car? I'm going to take care of that thing like the work it cost me to get it. And that's the same way I am with the gifts of the program. I'm working for these things. Most of the work is just an open set of mind. That's the biggest hurdle. Once you are able and willing to say, okay, maybe that's all you need is that maybe, you're starting to go on a great journey. Trust me, and it gets better and better. So that's what I do. And then, when I got to my step 12, I love recruiting other people. I don't actually recruit them. They seek me out. I don't know why. I guess crazy seeks crazy. And, that's just the norm of it. My sponsor says the same thing to me. He goes, well, what do you think I felt when you asked me to sponsor you? I said, well, you had all the same acronyms I do. ADD, ADHD, bipolar. So it's we're all, there's no coincidence. I've already vetoed that there is no coincidence in my life. Everything that has happened, I know there is a reason. I don't know what the rhyme or reason is sometimes at the time. Sometimes I have an inkling. But being able to share this and carry this with someone else, that is the best thing that has ever happened to me. And it's not now that I have sponsees that are sponsoring others that they get it, because until you sponsor somebody, you don't get it is that you're doing a job for them. No, they're actually helping you. And I say that too all the time, because anytime I have a new prospect, and they don't necessarily have to be my sponsee. In the old days, the sponsor took you through your steps. That's it. It's not like now this hand-holding stuff that we have today. If I am asked anybody to take them through their steps, and I used to, at my home group, I used to go there Saturday mornings early, and it was open to whoever wanted to. And I've taken a few men through their steps as well. They would just show up, and we would just talk, and I would do the same exact thing my sponsor did with me. And Again, just because you're a man and I'm a female does not mean that we don't have the same emotions and the same insecurities. We do. And sometimes there are some things there that they're kind of like afraid to say, and I'll turn around and say, you know what, it's an honest program. Of course I question my spiritual, I have to question everybody's spiritual motives. You know. It's like what I said last week about that gut instinct, you know who's there for the right reasons, and you know when you should say, hey, why don't you ask him over there? Take his number. He's a good, he may be very good for you and benefit your experience. But that's one of the wonderful things that, I continue to cherish about my daily reprieve, and I say that because it is daily. Every day it's a new gift. It's a new experience. It's a new thing. And I'm just so happy to be a part of this ride and cruise this. And I don't know what else is coming, but I know it's good. And things like I just said about what happened to me this week and all, when I think about it and I'm on my deathbed, I don't think that's going to be one of the first 5 thoughts in my head. This is just a little right now. I'm in this chapter, so it's present, it's prevalent. But I'm not going to let it take me out or kill me. I mean, I know God has this huge plan for me. I don't see it right now, but I'm trusting it. And that's how I feel. So, meeting's now open.